Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Presidente, your host and fearless leader, as I guide you through 2 hours of the maze of what we call sports, and we bring it to you from your point of view, the minion, the fan, the ones that really count. Your voice can be heard. Throughout the show, you'll be given the opportunity to give us a call. 917-889-8516 would be those digits. Write it down. Well, I tell you what, here it is, Halloween weekend. What's everybody going? It's Halloween. You know what? I like Halloween. I love it when the kiddos come to the door. And I'm going to try to scare them. And I'm going to try to build me a little graveyard in the front yard and really have a lot of fun with it. What about you? Feel free to tweet us what you're doing Halloween, what you're dressing up. If you're doing anything for Halloween, go ahead and tweet us, T-Balance, and we'd love to hear what my minions are going as. Is there any minions out there going as a minion from Despicable Me? Hey, there's a thought. Maybe I should go as a president. No, not a current president anyway. I know. I got to get my jabs in every week. Well, guys, we do have an action-packed show for you today and really excited about it to bring it to you. Coming up here just a few minutes in our racing segment, I'm really honored. We get guests, and all of our guests are great, but sometimes we just get guests that just you really, really enjoy having on. And I thoroughly enjoyed our lineup today of doing the interviews that we've got set up for you, and one of those coming up in the racing segment is Kevin Lee from NBC Sports, going to come on and recap IndyCar, talk with us a little bit about Dario Franchitti and what's coming up in 2014. A lot of changes coming up in IndyCar, so we're going to talk about that. And then also coming up right after that, we got Mr. Kent Sterling from KentSterling.com. You might know him if you subscribe to his YouTube channel, Breakfast with Kent, also from 1070 The Fan here in Indianapolis. And we had to catch up with a couple of these guys, Kevin and Kent, so we had to do a pre-recorded interview. Actually, Kent's doing his show right now on 1070 The Fan here in Indianapolis, and he does Ahead of the Curve with Mr. Hagan from Fox 59 Sports over there. So we're going to have Kent Sterling on at the top of the hour. One Mr. Derek Schultz for 1260 AM here in the Indy Metro. Know Derek well. Good guy. Loves to talk sports. And I think, I've been told that Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show over on X103 here locally, he's just a blast to have on. And so we're going to be talking NFL during that time. And then at 10:30, Fantasy Football Huddle, myself and Jared Calhoun, going to break down your fantasy football, your huddle, and also Todd the Teacher will be calling in during Fantasy Football Huddle. So, guys, yeah, make sure that you get your fantasy football questions ready if you want to call us at that point as well. Remember the digits, 917-889-8516. Well, guys, I'm excited, like I said, to have a good show for you today. It's always, always, always good to get this show started. We'll be right back with Mr. Kevin Lee.
Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana Water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
I want to go fast. I'm going to make that pass. I said I want to go fast. So baby, step on up.
Have with me this morning. I caught up with him earlier on in the week, but I'm honored to have with me one of the what I would consider the foremost experts of IndyCar, Mr. Kevin Lee of NBC Sports, 1070 the Fan. Also, yeah, I'm sure you've seen him on Indiana Pacers, Fox Sports, Indiana, certainly a radio host, sideline reporter. Really, I guess the better question is, Kevin, what is it that you don't do in radio and television?
Well, when you're a freelance broadcaster, you take any job you can get.
I hear you, sir. I appreciate you taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk with us today, and we're very honored to have you for the first time here on the ballots. And, Kevin, obviously you're right there in the action with everything with IndyCar, and your face is certainly associated with Indy broadcasts on NBC Sports, and they've just did a phenomenal job of coming in and taking over the broadcast of that and allowing fans to really get up and close and personal with IndyCar other than just the Indianapolis 500. And I certainly want to recap the championship last week, that race, Scott Dixon, his championship, but I also want to talk a little bit about Dario Franchitti. How's he doing?
As far as I know, he's doing as well as he could be doing. He's here in Indianapolis, as I understand. He's out of the hospital, was released last week. He's got a long road ahead of him to deal with the back injuries, but from people that I've talked to that have talked to him, he's in great spirits and is anxious to get back into a race car as soon as he can. Certainly, these are serious injuries, but as scary as that was, I think we all feel it's easy for us to say it because we're not dealing with the rehab, but I think everybody who knows Dario feels pretty pleased and fortunate that it is as it is, and he's going to be fine eventually, and he's probably going to be able to answer the bell at the beginning of next season.
Well, horrific wreck that he was involved in a few weeks before the championship, and it was just such a scary wreck. And, you know, at the time of the broadcast and watching it on your broadcast and the various highlights, you could just tell just that there was that moment there of that gasp that, you know, we remember back, you know, just a few years ago when we lost Dan Weldon out in Las Vegas, a very, very eerie similarity on how the broadcast was handled. You're right there on the front lines with us. Walk us through when that was going on. What was going on in your headset, and what was going on? What were you guys thinking about? What were you talking about?
Well, I think part of it is what did happen with Dan. And, you know, up to that point, when Dan crashed, I'll be honest, I didn't have an immediate concern. Now, I also hadn't seen it. I was working the radio broadcast that day in Vegas, and I didn't have an immediate replay. I knew it was a scary crash in the way it was being described, but we had almost become complacent because these cars are designed so much better. The safer barrier helps with the safety, that we have become complacent to the fact that, well, they always get up and they always ultimately walk away and might only have to deal with some minor injuries. So I think now anytime there's a scary-looking crash, it's kind of brought us back to reality that bad things can happen. And so until you hear something definitive and positive, then you just don't know. And I'm looking at it on a small monitor, and I couldn't see what was happening inside the cockpit. As I watched the broadcast back after I got home, you could see that he moved around. He was moving his head, and he flipped up his visor. Had I seen that at the time, I think I would have felt a lot better. But I think our approach is one of being very cautious, trying not to speculate very much and just going with facts rather than what we think might be happening. And luckily we got some facts pretty quickly from someone that was on the scene in Chip Ganassi that gave us at least a report that his injuries weren't dire. Yeah, they're serious, but, you know, he's awake and he's alert and he's talking. So that's good that we could get something definitive out like that instead of just speculating.
We're talking with Kevin Lee of NBC Sports. In IndyCar, obviously, NBC Sports have did a fantastic job of coming in and formerly, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I believe they're formerly the Versus Network, but just have really did a great job of coming in and bringing IndyCar to the fans. And we talk a little bit about the injuries in Dan Weldon. We know coming up on the 26th, which is today when this show airs, I know we're taping this earlier on in the week, Newcastle, Indiana is hosting a fundraiser, if you will, in honor of Dan Weldon, and Dan's widow Susie will be there, I believe, and also some top drivers. Now, Dario Franchitti was scheduled to be there. Is he going to be there in appearance? We obviously would think that he's not going to race, but is he going to be there for this fundraising race out in Newcastle?
I do not know. I would think not, but you never know. I do know that he wanted to come to the race at Fontana last weekend, but the doctors told him he couldn't do that. So I suppose it's possible, but his brother Marino is going to be racing in his place. And there's a long list. I don't have it in front of me of IndyCar drivers, but it's 10, 12, every team. I think there are 12 or 13 teams, mm-hmm. and every team has an IndyCar driver on their team, and some have two, and they used basically a gray area that it's not a full-time driver. For example, I think Connor Daly, who raced in the Indy 500, is on a team with Alex Tagliani, and there are several Indy Lights drivers, some Pro Mazda drivers. So there's a lot of ringers there, and then there's some corporate types. So you're going to have a lot of different skill levels out on the track at different times. I think this is a two-hour race in the rental carts, the kind of carts that you and I can go out there and race, which I will say are plenty quick enough for most
for
of
me.
Us.
Absolutely.
These will go, 50 miles an hour or so down the straightaway, and there aren't too many corners where you can go flat out with that unless you really know what you're doing. So they're going to get up and move a little bit, and it's really just a good casual experience, and it's one thing that IndyCar provides in difference, I think, to some other sports, is that these people are pretty approachable. And if you ever wanted an opportunity to meet them, this is a good chance. They're accessible during a race weekend, but I think we also have to understand that pretty much every minute of their day on a Saturday, Sunday of a race weekend is accounted for. So it's hard for them to stop and talk for a long while. This is going to be a little better chance. And they want to win, but it's not quite the same thing as the real job. And most of the drivers are also sticking around. I wouldn't say most, but quite a few are also racing in the Robopong race, which is a big national kart race, which is an endurance race. I think it's 200 miles around about a 1 mile track, so it'll take about 4 hours. There are two or three drivers per team. They have to do pit stops and things like this. And this is serious stuff. The winning team gets $10,000. So, you see the Joseph Newgardens, and I know Will Power told me he was looking forward to doing it. Ed Carpenter does it every year. There are seven or eight IndyCar drivers and a lot of really top-notch kart drivers that are in this. So both days are a lot of fun, good accessibility. I know on Saturday they've got an autograph session set for, I'm going to say, something like 11:45 on Saturday. I think the race is at about 2:45 on Saturday. And proceeds are going to the Alzheimer's Association. Dan Weldon's mother has been dealing with Alzheimer's for many years, so Dan's brothers, his dad, his wife Susie is going to be there, so many of his friends. I know Scott Dixon is one of those that's driving, so it should be a good time this weekend in Newcastle.
Well, absolutely. Just for our Indianapolis sisters, I know we're a national broadcast, but for Indianapolis sisters, Newcastle is just a short 45-minute drive down 70 East, and you'll get there, and you certainly have time to get there right after this show because we're airing this interview at 9:30 in the morning. So you have time to get out there. Lionheart, Dan Weldon, we tragically lost him back in 2011 in Vegas, and just really a huge shock to the racing community. So it's a good opportunity for you to bring awareness and to raise money for the Alzheimer's Association, but at the same time to get out there and remember Dan and be a part of that racing. Let me ask you this, and maybe you don't know the answer to this, but why Newcastle?
Well, that's one of the best kart facilities in the country, and it certainly is by far the best outdoor kart facility in the state of Indiana, the closest to Indianapolis. So that's an easy one, and it's a race that Dan drove in, the Robopong race, mm-hmm. That he won in 2005, and I know he raced in it several times, was scheduled to race it, and in 2011 had to cancel because he was going to race in Australia, so he wasn't set to race that at the end of that season. But he loved Newcastle. That's what IndyCar drivers do on their off weekends. My son races karts out there, and we just started doing it a couple of months ago, but every time we've gone out there, we've run into an IndyCar driver. So that's what they do, and karting is how they stay fresh and keep sharp. And this is, I'm told, one of, if not the best facilities in the country.
Well, wow, that's some good information. I did not know that. I knew they had a great kart race out there, and I knew that they did that charity race every year prior to the 500, but I did not realize what a caliber it was, so thanks for sharing that with us. Well, obviously, last weekend, Scott Dixon gets crowned his third championship. It was pretty much the usual suspects as we went into the chase there, but talk with me about Scott Dixon, how he was able to pull it off. Certainly he was right there neck and neck with Elio, and really up until, you know, when we could figure out who the winner was going to be, we didn't know who was going to be the champion, and it's always good, especially to see a guy like Scott Dixon and Elio in there. Those are the usual suspects. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see Hinch up there sometime, and I would love to see some of the younger drivers have that opportunity. But it's good to see good caliber drivers get the championships. And I think, you know, we talk a lot about the flaws of the chase, and that's certainly not the point of this conversation. But I think IndyCar really did it right this year. I think by far this year, 2013, was probably outside of maybe a few mishaps, one of the best seasons year-long around, and got the championship right this year.
Well, I think what stands out to most of us about the IndyCar season and the championship is that they don't have to have any kind of a chase or a playoff system or reset points or anything like that. And every single year it comes down to the last race. This is 8 years in a row. You know, I'm going to say it's maybe 12 of the last 14, something like that. Since the early 2000s, it's 04 and 05 are the only 2 years where the champion hasn't been decided in the last race, and it's usually not decided until the last lap. And even though this championship was won by 27 points, with 20 laps or so to go, it's still not set. As long as Castroneves was on the lead lap, you knew that Dixon still had to finish the race, because if he finished somewhere in the teens and Castroneves won the race, then Castroneves could still win the championship. And there were points in that race where the points as they ran, when Elio was leading and Dixon was somewhere in the teens, that Elio would have been the champion if they finished where they were at. But Dixon won it because he did what he usually does. He does what he needs to do. Elio had to win the race, and Dixon had to finish worse than sixth. So Scott knew he just needed to stay within reach, be smart. Late in the race, they were having some overheating problems, as a lot of teams were, and they were worried about losing an engine. There was a lot of debris that was getting in the radiator inlets. So they were being really cautious, taking extra pit stops, not worried about, especially since there were so many cars that were off the lead lap, you could pit as many times as you want and still be 6th, 7th, 8th, whatever it was at the time. So they just did simply what they needed to do, weren't too concerned about winning the race. Castroneves had to win, and eventually he took some contact and had to change a wing, and that put him a lap down and ended any chance that he had. But it was a fantastic championship, and I think a real story is that Scott Dixon had an awful start to the season. The Hondas clearly did not have the power that the Chevys did at the beginning of the season. They were getting a little better horsepower, but they weren't that competitive in Indianapolis. But starting at Pocono, they found something, and I think it was at a test at Sebring, and it applied a little bit to Pocono, then it certainly applied to the road and street courses, and Dixon won three in a row. He was able to deal with awful luck for a couple of straight races. And then finally, Castroneves had bad luck. He had had a charmed season, no DNFs, had run every lap until he lost a gearbox in both races at Houston. So this is not a case where Elio choked. He led most of the year. It was just mechanical issues that erased the big lead he had going into the final three races, and he just about did everything he could at Fontana. But again, the broken wing ended any chance he had of winning the race. So it's a good championship. They had 10 different winners this year. They've got parity. We had four first-time winners. Yes, it's still a lot about Penske and Ganassi and Andretti to some extent, but you saw A.J. Foyt win a race this year. You saw Dale Coyne win a race again this year. You saw what the people refer to, I think unfairly, as the B team from Ganassi with Charlie Kimball win a race. But you saw a guy that people didn't think could win a race at this point. So I think people like that they go into these races, especially the non-ovals, knowing that there's a list of about 15 different drivers that can win.
Well, absolutely, and we had an opportunity to see James Hinchcliffe win, certainly one of my personal favorites, and I always enjoy talking to him out there at the track when they're here in town with the Indy 500 and different races that I have an opportunity to go to, and I love talking with James. He's very, very aggressive, very, very good racer. Now, he moves over next year. He moves over to Andretti Motorsports next season. What kind of effect will that have on him and the success he's been able to lay down this year in 2013?
Well, I think his decision, a lot of it was based on stability. He's going to have a new sponsor next season. GoDaddy is exiting IndyCar as a primary sponsor, but he's going to stay with Andretti where he's been the last couple of years, and that's the idea behind that. He had, I think, some other offers and opportunities out there, but you know with Andretti what you have and what he has, and they've got a good thing going with Ryan Hunter-Reay, and Marco Andretti is back. The fourth, potentially fifth cars with Andretti are a little bit uncertain right now. We're pretty certain Carlos Munoz, who was the rookie who finished second in the Indy 500 this year, is going to move up from Indy Lights into an Andretti car. But Hinchcliffe is going to be a factor again, and he's great for IndyCar. He's from Toronto. Canada is a great market for IndyCar. I think Americans embrace Canadian drivers mm-hmm. just as well, so it's almost as if you get two nationalities covered there. And he lives part-time in Indianapolis, and he's just great at marketing himself, his sponsors in the series. So while we're not supposed to root for people, I think a lot of people within the series are happy that Hinchcliffe does well.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that in a lot of ways he's become the new face of IndyCar, and that's exciting to see the new young drivers up and coming. And, you know, one of the other big news that as far as switches going around, we look at Ganassi switches to Chevy after years of being with Honda. First of all, why that switch? And good thing, bad thing?
You know, we never got any definitive answer, and that's not surprising. Most companies keep these types of things somewhat under wraps. It could be because he's also a Chevy team on the NASCAR side, so he wants to simplify things a little bit. It could be because some business aspects worked out better to be aligned with Chevy. And it might be, and this probably makes the most sense, that he just thought he had the best chance to win the Indianapolis 500 being a Chevy team. And Chip was pretty outspoken of his unhappiness with Honda early in the season when they were clearly down on horsepower to Chevy, and the decision might have been made at that point. Second half of the season, obviously Honda really got their act together. And I was told by Honda drivers this weekend at the Big Oval at Fontana that they were still down on power, but they felt like they had a chance to be competitive because of potential the ability just to run the 500 miles, and they might get better fuel mileage and so forth. And next year there's some changes as far as the specs of engines that might equalize things just a little bit. So we'll see what happens there. But it probably just came down that Chip decided, all right, I think Chevy's got a better program right now, so we're going to try to hook up with them.
Well, and absolutely. We're talking with Kevin Lee of NBC Sports, Pit Reporter, and just really a big part of the broadcast with NBC Sports and IndyCar. Well, I tell you what, it's going to be a great year for 2014, and we talk about the Indianapolis 500, brand new look, brand new face. We've got, of course, the Indianapolis 500 is the same as always, but we also have the Grand Prix of Indianapolis, and we've talked about this many times on this show, and we've talked about it with different people. I think a lot of fans like the idea that they can go see IndyCar on a road course. Are you a road course IndyCar fan? Great, we got something for you. Oval, you got your diehard oval fans like, oh, we don't like that road course. Then you got the diehard road course IndyCar fans that say, hey, we love that. Although they're not going to be racing through the streets of Indianapolis, but they will be on the road course out there at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Grand Prix of Indianapolis. We really don't have anything to judge it by, but looking at it, this is all things positive for Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the sport, and the Indianapolis 500.
I think IndyCar is in a situation where they need to be bold, and they need to be willing to take some chances, and clearly running another race with IndyCars at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway doesn't sit well with everyone. There are some traditionalists that are very much against it. I think the argument to that would be that's already by the wayside. Once they had a NASCAR race there, a Formula One race, a MotoGP race with motorcycles, there's a sports car race now. You know, we've moved past that, so let's just do the best thing that they can do for the business. And the other concern was, well, this might take away from the 500 or hurt the 500. And I'm sorry, I can't buy that one at all. I just don't see anyone saying, I'm going to this road course race and not going to the 500. If you're going to pick one, you're going to the Indianapolis 500. So this is going to be either people deciding they're going to both, really that's probably it. Or maybe they have some sort of conflict on race day with the 500, and this is the only time that they can come. It's not going to be 250,000 people. We understand that. But if you look at the kind of crowds they get at most other places, I think it's going to be similar. They've said they're hoping for around 40,000. I think that's more the number looking for in future years. I'll be surprised if it's not 50 or 60. I think it could be as many as 80 this first year because I think people are going to be interested in it. There have been concerns about whether this road course is raceable or not. And some of the drivers have said it's not a good road course. But they're going to make a few changes. And even if they don't, we've heard that going to places like Barber Motorsports Park. Well, you can't pass there. Mid-Ohio, Sonoma. They had good racing there with this new Dallara car that was introduced last year. So I'll be surprised if it's not a good race. The car is more durable. They can bang a little bit. The Grand Am races have been good there. But the main thing that this does, well, there are several. One is it brings revenue. That's extra money. Normally on that opening weekend, they'll draw 5,000 people to come to Indy 500 practice. Now maybe you draw between the 3 days, maybe you draw somewhere between 60 to 100,000 people. So that's extra cash. They can get a title sponsor for this race, which could be over $1 million. That's cash for IndyCar that lets them do other things. And I think the way I've described it is it announces your presence with authority. It opens up the month of May with something that might get you a little bit more on the map. I live here in Indianapolis, and I think people nationally think that, well, everyone knows what's going on at the track in May, but they don't. Even in Indianapolis, they really pay attention once we get to that weekend. I think you'd like to let people know that the track is open, and I think you've got a better chance doing that if you have a race that's going to be on national television. The media is going to get behind this. Everybody's going to be here. Yes, it's an extra IndyCar race that I think will get a better rating than any of the other races except for the 500. But I think it's going to be a big kickstart for the Indy 500. It's a three-hour commercial on ABC for the 500. So I just can't find enough negatives to say that they shouldn't be doing this. I think this is something that they should be doing, utilizing their best asset, which is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Well, absolutely, and I couldn't have worded it better myself. That is exactly what that is. And what a great move it was. I applaud them. I think it's a great thing for the sports. I think it's a great thing for fans. And talk about, one of the things that I've heard fans talk about is on the road course, it gets hard to see. You can only see parts of it. Well, they're used to watching it in an oval, but I do know that they're doing some work out there. They're increasing some mound areas, and they're trying to move around some spectator areas. So maybe some of those problems will be changed. Obviously, it's going to be happening over the weekend of the 14th, and as you said, it's a big lead-in to the Indianapolis 500, which – I think, you know, obviously it's going to draw a lot of local people, but certainly within a 5 to 6 hour drive, I think we're going to get a lot of people. And I totally agree with that number of 80,000 there on the very first race. I mean, look at how big Brickyard was on the very first race that was. So an exciting time it is for the Indianapolis Grand Prix as we get ready for that. Now, always what we try to do here, Kevin, is and I know we've got these questions a little bit early, but through our social media stuff, we get different questions throughout the week, and I kind of put them aside, and we talk about them during the show. So I'm just going to – some of these we've already talked about, but there are a couple questions here that have been tweeted to us. Was that the first win for Will Power of the season?
No. He won, I think, 3 races this year.
Okay, so he won 3 races, and what about the comment?
I know he won the second race at Houston, and he won at Sonoma as well. So what was a down year for Will really wasn't that bad. He won 3 races and finished 4th in the championship, and I spent some time with him on Sunday night after the banquet, and he was pretty excited about the performance, and he was really proud of the fact that he finished every oval this year. He thinks he's taken a major step forward, and I really think he's going to be a big-time contender for the championship again next year.
And I think you answered the next question there, because the next question was, has Will Power shut up his naysayers who said he cannot win on an oval?
I would say yes. It's the second time he's won, although there was a little asterisk the first time because it was the doubleheader race at Texas where it was about half-distant races, slightly more than half-distance, and where they inverted the field. Frank Heedy started way at the back in that race. That was in 2011, I think. But I know he felt really good. I think he felt like he got the monkey off his back. And I said, well, you know, now can you do it when you're in the middle of a championship chase? And he said, yep, that's the next one. But I just think he's got a little better perspective on things and is going to put a little less pressure on himself. So I think he'll perform well on the ovals moving forward.
And one more question from our Twitter world. Has TK been picked up by a team? If not, will he be? And is there any truth to the rumor he'll be going to NASCAR as opposed to IndyCar?
No, he will not be going to NASCAR. He has signed with Ganassi to drive a car with that program, with NTT Data is the sponsor. It's the sponsor that Ryan Briscoe had this year for the Indy 500 in a Ganassi car, so it's not one of the target cars, but it'll be closely associated with Dixon and Frank Heedy, and he'll work out of it. Although that's not totally decided. They may move them all in the same building, but essentially it's a 4-car team with Charlie Kimball being the 4th. But he's got a solid ride. He's very excited about that. Dario Frank Heedy is one of Tony Kanaan's closest friends. They had a great relationship as teammates back with Andretti Green Racing, back when Kanaan won the championship in 04. And then Dario won it in 2007. So I think that this is going to be a pretty formidable team moving forward.
And we've also got another last question here. And what I want to ask you about is the developmental league with IndyCar. I think IndyCar did a great job of developing young drivers. And we look at where Hinchcliffe has came from and where Pippa Mans came from and others have came out of the Indy Lights series. And now we look at the new Mazda Road to Indy. Any drivers you're looking at in either the Indy Lights Series or the Mazda Road to Indy as we look into 2014 season that really can make their break and to be look for them to be standout drivers in 2014?
Well, I think Sage Karam is the only current Indy Lights driver that has a chance for 2014. He gets some extra money towards his funding. It's up to $1 million as the scholarship money, essentially, as the Indy Lights champion. He, I'm told, is really talented, really bold, aggressive, brave. He grew up across the street from Marco Andretti in Nazareth, Pennsylvania. He started driving in the Road to Indy Ladder Series when he was 15 years old. and what I think is going to stand out next year, because I think he'll at least be in the Indy 500, is that he could drive in the Indy 500 and then graduate from high school the next week. Or maybe it's the week before, but whatever. He is a senior in high school this year, so he will be just finishing up his senior year when he's competing in the Indy 500, and he might do the full season. I think that's to be determined what kind of opportunities he has, because it obviously takes more than the $1 million scholarship. It takes, depending on what team you're with, anywhere between $4 to $7 million to be able to fully fund an IndyCar program. So that's just getting started. But he's got some good backers behind him, so I think we'll see him at least part-time. I think Zach Veach, who is one of the Andretti drivers, is a young kid from Ohio who looks like he's 12 but is also 18. He was in his first year of Indy Lights. I think that people think pretty highly of him. He's marketed himself really well. He's at least a year away. I think you'll see him eventually. And the one down the road to watch out for is Matthew Brabham. He finished the Pro Mazda season this year, which would be, if you know baseball, like AA compared to AAA, which is Indy Lights, one step away from the major leagues. But Pro Mazda is the step before Indy Lights, and he won something like 13 of 17 races this year. And you know he's got the pedigree. His father is Jeff Brabham, former IndyCar driver, former NASCAR driver, sports car champion. And his grandfather is a two-time F1 world champion, Sir Jack Brabham, who drove in the Indy 500. So Matthew Brabham, from all accounts, has it, and he's been dominant so far. So he'll be in Indy Lights next year driving for Andretti, and he's only 18 years old, so we'll maybe 19. But we'll see him in IndyCar in a couple of years.
Amazing to me to see these young kids. Some of these kids don't even have a driver's license yet, and yet they're able to drive cars at 200 miles an hour. Completely amazing. We've been talking with Kevin Lee. Kevin, I appreciate you taking some time with us, part of the NBC Sports Network. And I know they did a lot with IndyCar, and they really picked up a lot with Formula One. Now, we know that Formula One, I believe, came to Austin this past year. Is there any Formula One scheduled for the States other than one race? Are you going to be working any of those Formula One races?
No, I will not be. They use the same crew for each one. This year they have Austin coming up. I don't have the schedule in front of me, but that's in November, I believe. I think there are maybe four races left. Next year they may go to New Jersey. That's still to be determined. It's on the proposed tentative schedule, but the check still has to be formally written to Bernie Ecclestone before that gets down. So we're hoping for a couple of Formula One races next year. We've been excited at NBC and the NBC Sports Network that we're basically the home of open-wheel racing with Formula One and IndyCar.
Absolutely.
And at some point soon, we'll be really one of the main homes to motorsports. Starting in 2015, NBC and NBC Sports Network will have the second half to the NASCAR, Sprint Cup, and Nationwide season. So pretty much any form of motorsport you want to find is mostly going to be on NBCSN. Fox is still going to have the first half of the NASCAR schedule. ABC still has five or six IndyCar races, but if you're uncertain, start looking for NBCSN and NBC, and there are a few other forms of motorsport that you'll find on the network as well.
Well, I tell you what, Kevin, it's been a real honor to have you on and take some time out of your busy schedule. I always ask people this: is there anything that we didn't cover, anything you'd like to talk with us about that we didn't mention tonight?
No, it was a fun season. Looking forward to a little bit of a break, and we'll do it again starting the end of March next year.
Kevin, we really appreciate it. Where can people find your work and your masterpieces and follow you or stalk you on social media?
I guess on Twitter at KevinLee23 you can follow me. I do Indiana Pacers home games on radio and a little bit on TV, and this year I'm going to start working some college basketball games for the Big Ten Network starting in January. So if there's a game or a race, I'm always looking for work. That's how it goes.
Absolutely, and you do a fantastic job. I mean, you really are the model of the guy that can do it all. So one of these days, we got money on it here. We're going to laugh when we see you on TV at an IndyCar race talking about the Pacers. So we'll see.
I've done that before. I slid that in. I mentioned that when I talked to Ed Carpenter. Ed sits next to me at Pacers games. We slide that in.
He's a huge Pacer fan. All right, Kevin, we appreciate you taking some time with us today. You're always welcome here, and we look forward to watching you in the 2014 season.
All right, thank you so much.
All right. Okay, you there?
And you will see this our town of Halloween. This is Halloween. This is Halloween.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth the Great. Stay tuned. My predictions are coming up right here on the Ballot Online with the host Tom Mom Keith.
In the 70s, they were an elite unit with names like Brick, Champ, Brian, and Ron. They rose like the phoenix, and then they were gone. Their legend became but a whisper, told by the trees, until now.
We're starting a 24-hour news channel, and we want you.
I'm going to do the thing that God put Ron Burgundy on this earth to do. Have salon quality hair and read the news.
This just feels right. The news team is back.
Welcome to the 80s, baby.
Is that your foot between my legs?
No.
Oh. It was my hand.
Your hair looks like wet popcorn.
I like the parts of your face that are covered with skin.
That Jack Lime. Look at him. He's a prince.
He's not that great.
What'd you say? He said you're not that great.
Rick.
Oh!
I don't read Jet Magazine or Jerry Curl Daily.
What are you doing?
I'm breaking down the barriers of race by assimilation.
And on that note,
which one of you convicts with the longest record can pass me the mashed potatoes?
My.
Am I right? Say what?
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're my role model.
It's time for
Remarkable.
Elizabeth the
Great. Those words, they have power.
Well, Elizabeth, you had another good week. You went 7-3 total, 8-2 the previous week, which brings your average up on week 8 to 38-32, so you're really getting up there. You're getting back to close to where you were last year this time, so good job for you. Now, there's something special about this week's games. Usually, Daddy picks the games. Who picked all the games this week, we're calling? Oh, that would be you. See, when you raise your hand, it doesn't work in radio that way. So,
Elizabeth,
you have to say me, Elizabeth.
Topic.
That's right. Let's get into it. We're going to start off in the Pac-12. We got two teams that are ranked. We have the number 12, UCLA Bruins, or the number 3, Oregon Ducks.
Number 3, Oregon Ducks.
You're going to go with the Oregon Ducks. Quack, quack. Another one, we're going to go, we have the North Carolina State Wolfpack, or the number 2, Florida State Seminoles.
Seminoles.
The number 2, Florida State Seminoles. Into the Big Ten. A game that you picked, I wouldn't have picked it, Daddy wouldn't have picked it, but you did. You got the Northwestern Wildcats or the Iowa Hawkeyes, neither of which are ranked. Who are you going to go with?
Iowa Hawkeyes.
The Iowa Hawkeyes. Another Big Ten game. This one does have a ranked team in it, probably the best one of all the Big Ten teams our game's playing. We've got the Penn State Nittany Lions or the number 4 Ohio State Buckeyes.
Ohio State Buckeyes.
The number 4 Ohio State Buckeyes.
Okay.
And finally, we're, of course, even if you pick them, we're still going to call this game. We've got the Notre Dame Fighting Irish or the Air Force Academy Falcons.
Fighting Irish.
The Notre Dame Fighting Irish. Moving on to the NFL, the first 1 o'clock game, you picked the Miami Dolphins versus the New England Patriots. Who are you going to go with to win that game?
Miami Dolphins.
You're going to go with the Miami Dolphins on the upset. Another 1 o'clock game, we have the Cleveland Browns or the Kansas City Chiefs.
Kansas City Chiefs.
The Kansas City Chiefs. Moving on to 4 o'clock, we have the New York Jets or the Cincinnati Bengals.
Cincinnati Bengals.
The Cincinnati Bengals.
Sunday Night Football, we have the Green Bay Packers or the Minnesota Vikings.
Minnesota Vikings.
The Minnesota Vikings. And finally, for Monday Night Football, the Seattle Seahawks or the St. Louis Rams.
St. Louis Rams.
Ooh, going with the St. Louis Rams. Daddy would have went with the Seahawks. So, who picked those?
Elizabeth the Greek. Make sure to like me on Facebook, facebook.com/ElizabethTheGreek.
My eyes beheld an eerie sight, for my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mark.
Welcome back to The Balance. My name is Mark Wassell, Presidente. I tell you what, it's an honor to have my next guest here with me on a Saturday morning. We had an opportunity to catch up with him earlier on in the week, and Kent Sterling from 1070, the Fan, WIBC here in Indianapolis, certainly no stranger to radio, and been in the Missouri market, St. Louis market, prior to coming back to Indianapolis, and those of you that live here in the Indianapolis market are very familiar with Kent Sterling. Kent, welcome to The Balance, your very first time here on The Balance. We appreciate you coming on board and taking some time with us today to talk with us.
Well, thanks for having me.
Fantastic. Well, I tell you what, we got a lot to cover here, and I wanted to talk with you about a couple of things. A lot of the things that we're going to talk about, obviously, the St. Louis Cardinals and the World Series. St. Louis Cardinals being in the World Series against the Red Sox. You just came from working radio in the St. Louis market, so certainly you're very familiar with the teams and what's gone on there as well. So let's talk about this, the Brett Favre watch. I tell you what, I thought Twitter was going to shut down this week. Brett Favre, possibly, could it be, oh no, on the edge of our seats, could Brett Favre be coming back to the NFL and playing for the St. Louis Rams? Of course, all hogwash, but what were your thoughts when you first heard that?
My first thought was that Kevin Demoff is a genius for making the St. Louis Rams nationally relevant. There's no other road to relevance for the Rams. Grabbing the Favre straw, I thought was a stroke of genius.
So let me ask you this. Do you think that was kind of a deliberate plant just to get people talking about the St. Louis Rams again?
It wouldn't surprise me. Kevin Demoff's the COO of the Rams, and he's got a great sense of humor. He enjoys toying with the media from time to time. He's really a very honest guy and a great guy to deal with. But I think that he was having a little bit of fun, and he and Les Snead and Jeff Fisher, I thought that they were just enjoying themselves a little bit.
Perhaps he's taking a page out of Jim Irsay's How to Tweet to the Media book. absolutely. Well, obviously, that's not where the Rams decided to end up with. They ended up with Brady Quinn. Still got themselves a first-round draft pick. It's probably the only way that's going to happen. Well, my thoughts are, and maybe I'm the only guy out there that still believes that Tim Tebow could be – could he be a Brett Favre? No. Could he be an Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning? No. But could he be a good quarterback in – the NFL? I think so. Maybe I'm obsolete in that. I'm the only guy that thinks that. But why wouldn't the St. Louis Rams, being in the position that they were in after losing Bradford this past week to an injury, why wouldn't they look at Tim Tebow?
I think they all know what a lot of guys inside the league know, and that's that Tim Tebow was kind of uncovered. He was a guy who offensively brought some tools, and once people figured out what those tools were and how to scheme against it, then he became obsolete. And his reign of non-obsolescence, I think, lasted about 7 weeks. But everybody was able to scheme for him, and so now he's kind of a man without an outpost. And if anybody could have figured out a way to use Tim Tebow in a way to generate wins, I think it would have been Bill Belichick, who isn't a guy who's going to be fired because of a quarterback controversy. He's a guy who's strong with the media. He's a guy who, when he talks, people in New England listen. And that's really not so much the case in St. Louis. So you would activate an entire bunch of this, I mean no disrespect toward anyone, but religious zealots who find Tim Tebow's story so compelling that they can't see beyond his inability to throw the ball accurately to understand that he just can't play in the NFL as it's constructed today.
Well, we're talking with Kent Sterling of 1070 The Fan, and obviously, now, is the Sterling report, did I get that right? Is that your writing? Sterling.com. I'm KentSterling.com.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
KentSterling.com. Right.
And those of us, are, well, maybe nationally as well, know Breakfast with Kent on your YouTube channel as well. Yeah, I know you have a lot of fun with that, and that's how I was able to connect with you. But certainly we look at the quarterback situation out there in the Rams, and really we look at the quarterback situation here in 2013. Is quarterbacks that scarce, or is it just getting harder and harder and harder to play quarterback in the NFL?
I think it's a combination of the two. I think it takes a very unique combination of qualities to be able to succeed at the quarterback position in the NFL. You have to be able to do a whole lot of things well or a couple of things exceptionally well. And nobody that the Rams currently have, they're not able to do that. Kellen Clemens is not an outstanding quarterback by any measure. And now the two guys they've brought in, Austin Davis and Brady Quinn, they're not either. I mean, really, you need, and nor was Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford has some gaping holes in his resume. Andrew Luck's a guy who absolutely does not. Andrew Luck for the Colts has the whole package. He's behaviorally perfect. He's physically stout. He's got a great arm. He's an excellent leader. The Colts have somehow wandered into the two best quarterbacks of these two eras, the Manning era, which is, you know, within a couple of years of coming to a close, and then I think his successor is going to be Andrew Luck.
Well, absolutely, and I tell you what, Andrew Luck, and I watch, and I'm not just saying this because I live here in Indianapolis and love the Colts, but I love the way that Andrew Luck handled the Denver Broncos. I think we really did see the future of our era, and exactly, the Indianapolis Colts managed to get Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck back-to-back. That is absolutely unheard of. We here in Indianapolis don't know what it's like to have a quarterback situation. I mean, we did there briefly, but really on a long-term basis, and that's something that the Rams have struggled with for a while, and we'll see how Quinn can do. Certainly, he's followed the same path, maybe he passed the path for Tim Tebow, because he's played for outside of Cleveland. Tim Tebow's played for Denver and the Jets, and of course here recently Brady Quinn was with the Kansas City Chiefs. So he's been with Cleveland. Brady Quinn's been with Cleveland, Denver, Kansas City, and the Jets. Does Brady Quinn finally find a home inside the St. Louis Rams?
No, he's not answered any question regarding a starting quarterback position with the Rams, nor is Kellen Clemens, nor is Austin Davis. They're all nice guys, or at least Davis and Clemens are. But Brady Quinn, if he was a guy who could lead a team, he would have let him. If you look at him statistically, the games he's started, he's lost the vast majority of them. He's never had in any season in which he's played, he's never had a passer rating over 70. You know, he's just really not very good.
Well, we're talking with Kent Sterling, 1070 The Fan, and Kent, I want to certainly jump into the World Series in the St. Louis Cardinals, my St. Louis Cardinals. You know what? I know in the media we're supposed to maintain a certain level of biasness, but when it comes to the Colts or the Cardinals, I kind of, or IU basketball, I kind of throw that out the window. But I know you recently worked out there, WXOS, an ESPN affiliate out there,
yeah,
in St. Louis, very, very familiar with the Redbirds and the Cardinals and Mike Matheny and the St. Louis Cardinals. So you look at the trip that the Cardinals took, and they really didn't have an easy path getting to the World Series. And you look at one stumbling block that they had in the Pittsburgh Pirates. Who would have ever thought at the beginning of this year we were talking about the Pittsburgh Pirates possibly being in a World Series? I like the Pittsburgh Pirates. I follow them. Obviously, a AAA, their AAA affiliate is the Indianapolis Indians here in town, so I'm very familiar with the players. Sterling Marlin's actually been on this show before, so very, very familiar with the Pirates. So the Pirates put something good together. Hopefully they can build on that going forward. But Mike Matheny obviously taking the place of Tony La Russa. The culture that Tony put there for the St. Louis Cardinals, it doesn't matter who they've got. They've proven that they can lose Albert Pujols. They can lose some key players. They can have some injuries. They can have some losses and still get to the World Series. So talk to us about the St. Louis Cardinals, as you know them, how they made this trip to the World Series in 2013.
Well, everybody talks about the Cardinal way, and if you're a Cardinal fan, you love the Cardinal way. If you're not a Cardinal fan, you hate the Cardinal way, and you hate hearing about it. But the Cardinal way is a fundamental methodology of not just playing baseball, but building a farm system, running a business office, everything and everybody at the St. Louis Cardinals. They are fueled by winning, they're fueled by success, and they're fueled by doing it the right way. If you ever talk to Dan Farrell, who runs their business operations, this is a quality guy, a guy who knows what he's doing. He's very, very competent, but he's also great in the community, and he's wonderful to deal with. And that essence invades the entire operation, and that's what they do. The Cardinals, from a baseball standpoint, they had 15 guys on the LCS roster who were making the minimum. Only 10 were making above like $526,000. And yet, year after year after year, they go to the postseason. I think this is their 10th in the last 14. They've won two World Series in the last eight. This could be their third. It's not a dynasty, but it's close, and it's fueled on playing baseball the right way. And I really enjoyed the LCS because Yasiel Puig is a guy who hasn't embraced playing baseball the right way, and he was exposed in Game 7, and that was a lot of fun to watch because the Cardinals do it the right way. They make mistakes, you know, sure. The pop-up that fell between Wainwright and Yachty, that's a mistake. But over and over again, you know, over time, over a 162-game schedule, they do things the right way. They move runners. They take bases when it's wise. They work deep counts when it's necessary. They're just really good fundamental baseball players. And those guys who come over, like Carlos Beltran coming over to the Cardinals organization, he went from being a guy who really couldn't be counted on to play a full season. He embraced the Cardinal methodology and really wound up having two of his the better seasons in his career. I was brought up a Cubs fan. I grew up on the north side of Chicago, and we're supposed to not like the Cardinals, and Cardinal fans aren't supposed to like the Cubs. But moving to St. Louis, I really developed a profound appreciation, not just for the way the team plays baseball, but for the way the fans comport themselves and the way the Cardinals as a business operate.
Well, absolutely, and I love the Cardinals, and you also are a diehard Cub fan. We won't hold that against you, but you certainly are an admirer of the Cardinals and worked there in the Cardinal market for a while. I want to refer to an article on your website, Kent's Crumbs, talking a little bit about last night's game, and you really did phrase this well. I wish that I had the writing ability that you do to put this into words, because it is exactly true. The national media just either say ESPN or whoever you want always clings to the East Coast teams, whether they be the Yankees or the Red Sox or whoever it might be. And so quotes here, the national media is in full hyper mold as the Cardinals were blitzed 8-1 last night in Boston. They are like the Nimrods who read the first chapter to a novel to feel that they know exactly what is going to follow. If this series was Gone with the Wind, Rhett Butler just kissed Scarlett O'Hara. I loved it. Chapter 2 is tonight and will be played out tonight out in Boston. So talk with us about some of the and I should point out that we talked with you earlier on in the week, so this is actually Thursday, so I realize that we know a little bit more than we know now when the show airs on Saturday, but Chapter 2 is being played at the time of this recording, or at least getting ready to play. And I don't think, and you also pointed this out, even no matter what happens with this game, fans still won't be able to guess accurately what will happen throughout the rest of the series. So go ahead and what say you on Kent's Crumbs?
I think that the Cardinals are going to be fine. I think the series goes deep. These teams, they both won 97 games, do the little things well. They have a great internal culture. the guys on the Red Sox, the guys on the Cardinals, they all like each other, and that sustains you over a really long season. And you can see that on the faces of a guy like Chris Carpenter, who's still with the team, not actively participating because of the nerve damage. But he's, you know, he's engaged. The guys are all up against the dugout fence throughout all the games. Same thing with the Red Sox. I think it's a great series because it's the two best teams in baseball playing against each other, and they both play really good fundamental baseball, and they're both really fun to watch.
We're talking with Kent Sterling of KentSterling.com and 1070 The Fan, a host, head of the curve with Fox 59, Chris Hagan, every Saturday on 1070 The Fan, which is why we had to record you, because you're actually talking to the same time we are. So I appreciate you taking some time to talk with us. Well, as we very well, those of us that watched that game last night, know that the left-handed wall may not be the only greening monster out there at Fenway Park. Say it ain't so, I'm asking you, say it ain't so, John Lester cheating in game one. He brought out the Vaseline, and not for all the good reasons.
Yeah, I don't think he does it any more than anybody else. You know, everybody's looking for an advantage. He was awful good. His pitches did move like crazy. His cutter was unbelievable. But I don't, you know, it's kind of like the people during the Dodgers series that the Cardinals played when, and I can't remember the name of the base runner, collided with Molina.
He didn't
there
tag
was no
him.
Tag. Right, exactly. But, you know, that's an out. Everybody knows it's an out. Lester coming out with a foreign substance on his glove. I mean, that's, you know, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying.
Right. Well, that's what they say in racing, and we're finding out that seems to be the truth, too. Apparently, unfortunately, though, cheating might be the way of the game, which I don't necessarily agree with. Last night, or Wednesday night, game one proved very much to be Wayne wrong. What happened with Wainwright? He just didn't seem to be himself. Maybe it was because it was game one. Maybe it was nerves. But you would think a guy at that level, a leader of that team, could go out there and not be fazed by game one of the World Series.
I think a little of it was that there was a long lapse between starts. I think he had 9 days between starts. And that's a lot of rest for a guy who gets the ball every fifth day. He said his mechanics were screwed up, but he knows how they were screwed up. He knows how to fix it. So I think in game five, he comes back, assuming there is a game five, and I think there will be. He's going to come back and be strong. He's too good a horse. You know, he's not the kind of guy who puts up numbers like that. You know, regardless of the defensive lapses of Pete Cosma, who frankly, the Cardinals need to do something about in the offseason. You can't have a shortstop who, you know, he had a bad night with his glove, and you can't have a bad night with your glove if you're going to hit 217. But I think Wainwright's going to be fine. He's a great guy. He's a great community guy in St. Louis. He's got a terrific arm. Frankly, with him, I worry about the number of pitches he threw this year and the number of innings he threw. I don't think that a normal body, especially an arm that's had Tommy John surgery, can withstand that kind of strain season after season after season.
Well, that brings me to a very, very good point. And one of the things that you touched on earlier, the St. Louis Cardinals have a culture of winning. It's the Cardinal way. And what they do is they develop young players. And one of those young players is Waka, 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 and Waka do we trust. That's the new hashtag going around social media. Obviously, those Cardinal fans like myself are very much in tune with that. We love our new guy, our young kid, Waka, Waka, Waka. We don't need a beard to win a baseball game against the Red Sox. How good is this Waka kid, 21 years old, pitching in the World Series? Can you believe it?
He's great. And, you know, 18 other teams passed on him. He was drafted 19th, and it was a compensatory pick for losing Albert Pujols. So if Pujols left, but they got that pick, and with that pick they took Waka. And I think that even if you just look at Pujols in 12, 13, and whatever he does down the road compared to what Waka does, I think the Cardinals got the best of that deal, and that's what John Mozeliak, the general manager of the Cardinals, does.
I tell you what, I don't want to just dominate the Red Sox because we are a national show. I realize we have a lot of Red Sox fans. So let's walk on the to the other side of the field, to the other dugout. Let's walk into the dugout of bearded men. Let's talk about what the Red Sox need to do to beat the Cardinals. Obviously, that's happened before. 45 years ago, more or less, 1968, it happened. Long about this same time, seven games deep, the Cardinals lost. I'm sorry, it was 1967. I'm sorry that the Red Sox beat the Cardinals. So it has happened, and obviously in recent memory, the Red Sox have beat the Cardinals in the World Series. The Red Sox know how to beat the Cardinals. Mike Matheny is a very calculated manager that they have to play strategy, a really more or less a game of chess. So what does Boston Red Sox need to do to win this World Series? And you know what? As much as I love the Cardinals, I think there's a certain part of the Boston Red Sox that absolutely could come in, not sweep them, but certainly could come in seven games and take advantage of a weak bullpen with the St. Louis Cardinals, if not done right, and win.
Well, I think that the Red Sox kind of showed the blueprint last night. They need to work deep counts. Swing only at strikes, make the Cardinal pitchers get them out with strikes, and then the timely hitting to back that up. And when you do that, you're going to win baseball games. And then on the other side, they really need good pitching. And not having Buchholz, I guess it's 50-50 whether he's going to throw game four or throw it all in the series. I think that's a big deal, too. That completely throws the dynamic of game four, where the Cardinals have Lance Lynn. If the Red Sox don't have Buchholz, that's a completely different game and will likely have a completely different outcome.
Well, we're talking with Kent Sterling. Kent, I know we're short on time here. I appreciate the time you've taken with us to talk with us today about the World Series and certainly about the St. Louis Rams. But the St. Louis Rams, after the bye week, meet the Indianapolis Colts. This is going to be a very, very difficult match for the St. Louis Rams. But also, the Indianapolis Colts need to enjoy that win and that week off. But at the same time, they do need to prepare for the St. Louis Cardinals. St. Louis Rams. That would be a story on itself. The St. Louis Rams, the Rams and the Colts. What are some of the things you see about that game coming up?
Well, I think that's an almost automatic Colts win. I think that the Rams without Sam Bradford are virtually a Jacksonville Jaguars level franchise. They have some talent defensively, but they have lapses, and I think Andrew Luck's the guy who can take advantage of those lapses. And offensively, they are really more or less inert. And if the Colts defense was stout enough to stop the Broncos and Peyton Manning in large part, I don't think they're going to have any trouble with St. Louis.
Well, Kent,
I love him though. I'm going to be the spotter for the Rams radio network that day with some of my old coworkers. So
well, there you go.
Maybe I'm talking out of school. I love the Rams, but I think the Colts are going to wipe them out.
Well, and I think that all the crystals will line up for that. The fortune ball tells us. I don't think that is one that we really need to worry about. But at the same time, stranger things have happened, and certainly upset alerts have happened. But, you know, one of the things that I worry about, and maybe it won't come in too much of effect with this particular game, but as you talked about a few days ago on Breakfast with Kent, you were talking about Reggie Wayne being a huge blow. And you know, talking about Bill Polian and what he would do and maybe pull somebody up from the practice squad. And we know Brian Grinson has been very, very aggressive, probably went out there and played the free agent wire and wheeled and dealed more than any general manager in the NFL. Not that Reggie Wayne is replaceable, but will Grigson go in and look for a new wide receiver since Reggie Wayne is out? Or does the next man up have to be Hayward Bay and T.Y. Hilton have to get up there? And, hey, guess what? We learned from the best, Reggie Wayne, and we're ready for the job, Coach.
Well, I think that we're going to find out this week what Ryan Grigson thinks about T.Y. Hilton and about Darius Hayward Bay. If he doesn't think that highly of him, he's going to go out and trade for a guy like Hakeem Nicks, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. The Giants are playing a lost season at this point. They're 1-6. So we're going to find out whether Ryan Grigson thinks those guys can carry the mail, and I think they can. I think T.Y. Hilton, he's a little bit undersized, and that's why he fell to the third round. But overall, I mean, I can't think of many exterior receivers that you'd rather have at his stage of development than T.Y. Hilton. And as far as Darius Hayward Bay, as long as he holds onto the ball, he's a beautiful athlete. He can run. He can move. He runs good routes. And Andrew Luck has a way of inspiring these guys to play their best. And I think these guys are going to step up, and Reggie's still going to be there as a leader. And I think that those guys are going to step up and do the job. And if Grigson thinks that somebody can help, we know he's going to go get them.
Well, we're talking with Kent Sterling. Kent, I appreciate you taking some time with us today. I always like to ask my guest. I always like to ask my guest this, and certainly I know you cover a wide array of topics of sports, much like we do here on The Balance. So is there anything that we didn't ask you, anything you'd like to talk about, anything you'd like to chime in? What's coming up this next week on Breakfast with Kent? And I don't want anybody to turn off my show to go to your show, but what's going on ahead of the curve with you and Chris Hagan over at 1070 The Fan?
Well, we're going to talk Colts. Obviously, it's the bye week, but we'll still talk Colts. Much like this is recorded, I recorded about 10 minutes with Solomon Hill today at Pacers practice, and so we're going to play that. And Solomon is a great kid. And what Larry Bird's done with the roster of the Indiana Pacers over the last 8 years is really phenomenal. He's gone from it was a band of renegades after the retirement of Reggie Miller, and they had a bunch of not the best citizens, and what he's done is go out and get really, really good guys who get along very well. They understand the role in the community. They know how to play winning basketball. They went out and got a great leader in David West, and they're going to contend for an NBA title. And I think they should be the odds-on favorite in the NBA Eastern Conference. I think it's going to be a phenomenal year for the Pacers. And then with the Hoosiers, it's a complete unknown, isn't it? They lost almost all their offense. They lost 80% of their minutes. And, how much of the load can Noah Vonleh and Yogi Ferrell and Will Sheehy carry? I think it's going to be fascinating to see what happens in Bloomington this year.
Well, absolutely. And on the football side, do they get into a bowl game this year?
They've got to win those three games, the three home games that are left against Minnesota, Illinois, and Purdue. If they win those, they go. The other games I don't think are winnable. They play at Wisconsin and at Ohio State, if I'm not mistaken, and those are losses. But the other three, they've got a good chance to win. I think Kevin Wilson's the right guy for that job. He's getting a little bit of heat. Kurt Mallory's getting a little bit of heat. But I think they're about ready to turn the corner. And once they get – if they get to next year with another good recruiting class, I think that they're going to have guys that have been in the pipeline that can absolutely play, and they're going to be a different team.
Absolutely. Well, Kent Sterling, we appreciate you taking some time to be with us. I can talk with you all night long, but I know I catch you a window there. Breakfast with Kent. Now, I tell you what, I like Breakfast with Kent. It's quick. It's easy. Good cup of coffee there. You can find that on YouTube, social media. You're all over the place, but where can people find your writings, find Breakfast with Kent, find you on Twitter, stalk you on Facebook, anywhere?
Absolutely, people should friend me on Facebook, and that's how we wish people happy birthday at the end of every Breakfast with Kent, because it's a little folksy, and I miss the folksiness of radio a little bit.
Sure.
So, and I grew up in Chicago with a guy named Gray Rayner, who did a morning show for kids that I thought was just hilarious. So, the birthdays are kind of a tip of the hat to Ray Rayner. But on Facebook, search me, Kent Sterling. I accept almost all friends. And, any who are from this company, you get kind of the weird solicitations from from kind of out of the country. They're looking for money or whatever. I don't accept those, but all others. And at Kent Sterling is the Twitter handle, and Ahead of the Curves on 1070 The Fan every Saturday, usually from 11 to 1, but this week it's from 8 to 10. And then KenSterling.com is kind of a one-stop resource for all of that stuff. All the interviews that we do on Ahead of the Curve, I post on KenSterling.com. And, periodically I just, I'm really enjoying the process of creating content rather than managing it. Creating the content's really a lot of fun, and I enjoy it every day.
Oh, absolutely, and I could echo that more. And so if you're not looking to get money from Kent, but if you're looking to give money to Kent, if you're looking to give money, he'll accept your friendship. But if not, Kent, we appreciate it. You're always welcome here on The Balance. Don't be a stranger.
Thanks, absolutely. Have a good night.
All righty.
Hi, I'm Mark Timmons of U.S. Water Systems, a family-owned Indiana company that sells water treatment equipment around the world. But we especially know Indiana water because our world headquarters are right here in Indy. You have bad water in your home or business? Whether you're on city or well water, uswatersystems.com makes it easy to solve your water problems. We offer videos, all sorts of water conditioning equipment, and tech support 365 days a year by certified water specialists. U.S. Water has reverse osmosis systems, water softeners, and salt-free water conditioners from $179. Visit us at uswatersystems.com.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
So you're not good at sports. It's a very small part of life.
Sports. Bart, Bart rides up in the front seat today because he's a good guy at sports.
What does the fox say? What the fox say?
All right, my minions, welcome back to The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. What a great first hour we have had. Kevin Lee from NBC Sports breaking down the IndyCar Championship of last week and certainly what we've got to look forward to coming up here in Indianapolis with the Indianapolis 500. And then also Kent Sterling from over 1070 the Fan. Always good to have him on our Halloween edition. It doesn't get any scarier than this, especially with my next guest, Derek Schultz of 1260 AM of the Query and Schultz Show. Derek, how you doing, sir?
Hey, Tom. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm glad you finally got an opportunity to join us. We're standing by, supposedly, Mr. Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show is supposed to be joining us. He did just send me a text, but he's always fashionably late. Here he is right now.
I know that. Yeah, you're preaching to the choir there, but it's tough, Tom, because you know I like all your Facebook statuses, so I figured I'd get the invite a little bit earlier. But you know, happy to be on still.
Hey, man, you know you gotta earn the invite to the Balance. No, I'm just kidding. Of course you don't need an invite. Here he is, guys. Give it up for the one, the only, Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. Jason, as always, how you doing, sir?
I'm sober this morning, so that's a good morning.
Hey, when was the last time that happened in the morning for you? I know you just got back from Vegas, and we're all dying to hear your hangover stories. So certainly with the three of us, and I warned my producer that you and Derek Schultz as well, Jason, were getting ready to come on the air, and when the three of us together, we need to send the kids to the other room. So, Ty, right. I know you guys just went – the Hammer and Nigel show just went to Vegas. Give us a real quick recap. What happened out there? Any fun stories that you can not leave in Vegas? We'll put it that way.
Well, one of us had a run-in with the law, but it was a big misunderstanding. That was taken care of. We saw some European businessmen being escorted out of a suite because their party got so out of control with techno music, and they also may have been rubbing bodily stuff on their bodies. We gambled heavily. We won some. We lost some. We drank a lot. And we made it back alive. So all in all, a successful Hammer and Nigel trip.
Did you wake up with a tiger or anything like that?
No, but what I don't understand is how can a city that prides itself being Sin City, what happens here stays here? You know, if that's their mantra, you know, I punch one hooker, then I'm the bad guy.
Derek, also joining us is Derek Schultz from 1260 AM, the Quarry and Schultz Show. Guys, we're going to talk some sports, but it's always fun to have you on. Derek, you got any big plans for Halloween? Are you going to be trick-or-treating? Are you going to be scaring the kiddos, doing anything like that?
No, we have an apartment complex, which is, it like disallows anybody to trick-or-treat, and we bought like 8 pounds of candy the first year that we were here, and nobody came by, so we had to eat all the candy ourselves. But I got invited to a costume party for the first time in like 7 years that we're going to tonight, and then Marlon Jackson, the former Colts, actually throwing a costume party on Monday, and we're doing the show live from there. So Quarry and I just got our costumes in the mail, so looking forward to that.
Well, what is Quarry and Schultz going to be dressed as this year?
Well, we were taking submissions, and it was all, like, really complex stuff. It was, like, you know, Hank from Breaking Bad and Marie, or Jesse and Walt from Breaking Bad, or Dumb and Dumber, you know, Harry and Lloyd, something like that. But I just tried to go simplistic, and I found this really good hot dog costume. So I'm going to be the hot dog, and Quarry's going to be mustard.
I love it.
I just thought it was simple, you know, keep it simple, and that's once I get the hot dog actually inflated, it's pretty funny.
Well, just thinking about you inflating your hot dog, it just is a thought I don't even want to think about. So what's the Hammer and Nigel? Well, Jason, what's the Hammer and Nigel show going to be dressed as this year?
Nigel's going to be dressed as a fat guy. And I'll be a hillbilly from Beech Grove.
All right. Going as yourselves. I love it. Fantastic. Well, guys, let's get into some sports. And certainly, we just got done talking with Kent Sterling a little bit about this. But, boy, did St. Louis, they pulled the Favre card. Everybody nationally was talking about the St. Louis Rams and Brett Favre. First of all, I don't know whether to laugh more that they actually asked Brett Favre or that the media actually pounced all over it to think that it was really going to happen. We'll start with you, Derek. Brett Favre coming back to the NFL. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I don't think that was even close to being a realistic thing. I'm not sure if the Rams thought they could call him without it getting out, but clearly 3 years removed from the game, even a guy as great as Favre, he can't come back and play even at Jason Campbell's level, even at Josh Freeman's level. I think you're much better off with even Brady Quinn than you are with Brett Favre at this point because he's been so far removed from playing football. But, hey, it gave us something to talk about during the Colts bye week. And have you looked at the games this Sunday, Tom? It is maybe the worst lineup of NFL games that I have ever seen.
Well, and, you know, absolutely. It's going to be a blowout city. You look at San Francisco and Jacksonville. I don't know that Detroit-Dallas game. That might be a pretty good matchup. But, Hammer, what are your thoughts on Brett Favre and the NFL this week, lopsided matchups?
Yeah, there's a lot of bad games, like Derek said. And I was fortunate enough to play some bets down before I left Vegas on some of these turds. But in terms of Brett Favre, I agree with Derek. This was never going to happen. This was something I think was created
they got more buzz than it should have. And if the St. Louis Rams are really seriously considering Brett Favre, then somebody needs to revoke management of that squad, because there's a lot of better options out there than a 44-year-old grandpa with brain injuries that hasn't played in 3 years.
So those better options would what, you know, I'm curious. Kit Sterling just told us that really that it makes no sense to even entertain Brady Quinn, but at the same time that's who they ended up with. But why not Tim Tebow? There's a couple other quarterbacks. I'm just wondering why everybody may have passed on the whole Tim Tebow era, and I'm not trying to be that guy all for Tim Tebow. Maybe he needs to understand he needs to play a different position. But I don't know, if you're looking at Brady Quinn or Tim Tebow, why lean toward Derek? Why lean toward Brady Quinn as opposed to Tim Tebow when you're looking at – could look at both of those?
Well, these guys get paid a lot of money, Tom, to evaluate these quarterbacks. And I'm kind of thinking the same thing. Vince Young is another guy that I would throw in the mix. Well, why not Tim Tebow or why not Vince Young? Look, if those guys could play – they'd be playing. Somebody would pick them up. Somebody would sign them. I think what happened with Tebow specifically is going to New England for his last chance was his last chance, because people look at that and they say, if Bill Belichick and the Patriots developmental staff can't get something out of Tim Tebow, then how the hell are we going to get something out of Tim Tebow here in St. Louis? So I think really that was maybe the death knell on his career as an NFL quarterback. Quinn certainly hasn't shown much, but he just started at the end of last year in Kansas City. He's the least removed from the game out of all three or four of these guys that we've been talking about today. Clearly, he's not a great option. He's not even a mediocre option, but he's the only option. I think it's a slight on the state of quarterbacking right now in the NFL. You've got about 15 guys that range from pretty good to great, and really that's it. Once you have the drop-off, you're screwed.
Now, Jason, still on the Tim Tebow, and Vince Young, that's another good one, and we'll get your thoughts on this, Jason. If you're the St. Louis Rams and you need a quarterback, and you go with Brady Quinn, but if you're Tim Tebow, pick me. What do you do outside of fire your agent and sell your Heisman? What do you do now? Does he go about his life, be a public speaker, or does he actually entertain the thought that, hey, I can play in the NFL but a different position, Jason?
Well, for one, for starters, I'm one of the few people that thinks Tebow should actually still be in the NFL. Now, in no way am I saying this guy's a starter, but when you look at some of these guys that are backups around the league, you look at T.J. Yates and some of these cats, there's no reason why this guy shouldn't be in the league. It's just people don't want the headache. The fact that his fame has created such a burden, you know, if you're a mediocre, borderline roster guy, you factor all that in, most teams view that it's not worth it. Now, that aside, if I were Tim Tebow, I would change positions. But at the end of the day, that's not what he wants to do. So, I mean, I don't think you fire your agent, because let's be honest, we're talking about a guy that's not been in the league all year long, and he still gets more publicity than most people. I think that's a pretty solid job by the agent. The fact that his name still comes up all over the place, people chant his name in Jacksonville. I mean, if you're an agent, you have a guy that's not on a roster, and you still get all this kind of publicity, I think you'd be doing a pretty solid job there.
Yeah, I agree with Hammer. Let me just butt in here real quick, Tom.
Absolutely.
I agree with Hammer that if I'm Tebow, I would change positions, because that's, I think, what you have to do to have an NFL job. But if he doesn't want to do that, look, I mean, I want to be on SportsCenter and, you know, have Jessica Alba come over to my house, but it's not realistic. It's not going to happen. You have to make good with what you have, and you have to – clearly the guy is a football player, right? He can play football. I think we'd all agree with that. He just can't play quarterback in the NFL. So he's going to have to make that adjustment. He's been given three chances. Time's up. If he's not going to be an H-back or a tight end or try to do something else, then he's not going to play professional football ever again.
Well, he's going to be a professional speaker, write books, and so forth. Guys, we are running a little bit behind here, so we're going to combine NFL talk with our fantasy football huddle as well. And our normal fantasy football huddle partner in crime is Mr. Jared Calhoun, a colleague of mine over at Gannett, and self-proclaimed expert in fantasy football, and certainly has proven to be better than me this year in both the Balance League and the Work League. In our Work League, I would point out, guys, is 16 teams deep. So when we have a when something goes wrong, it goes really wrong. Jared Calhoun, how you doing, sir?
I'm great. How you doing this morning?
We're doing good. Joining us also is Derek Schultz of Aquarian Schultz at 1260 AM and Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. We're going to be talking some NFL and fantasy football. Anything you want to chime in, Jared, on the Tim Tebow, Brady Quinn, St. Louis Rams quarterback debacle?
Oh, man, I don't even know if there's anything worth talking about there. I'd love to see one of those guys get a chance and do something. I just don't think either is capable, unfortunately. We saw Tim Tebow do well in the Broncos system, but we know that that was a really good system. So I just don't – I'm not sure he could step into a team like the Rams and reproduce what he did in Denver.
Well, Derek, and Jason, we're going to talk some fantasy football and kind of combine our NFL talk here, guys. But Derek, you brought up an interesting point that the matchups this week are really, really lopsided. So, Derek, if you're a fantasy football owner right now and you're getting ready to set your lineup for tomorrow, what are some of the things you're looking at in lieu of this lopsided, screwed-up matchup week that we have?
Well, I think at this point, Tom, we can pretty much figure out what teams are good in what areas because we're about halfway through the season. So, for instance, if player A on your team is a quarterback and they're playing against a defense this week that is number one or number two or number three against the pass, you might want to think about adjusting that and bringing in a different quarterback. This is kind of the first – week eight or week nine is the first time that I really start looking at the total stats and start planning my matchups based on that. But there are guys that are great that are every week starts, and then there are guys that one week they're awesome and one week they're bad. I've never seen such a bipolar, really, for lack of a better term, year from running backs so far this year. I mean, I have Matt Forte on my team, and he's pretty much an every week start. He's on bye, but there are like maybe three other guys, Marshawn Lynch, Adrian Peterson, that are every week starts. But then that's it. I mean, you're scraping for Chris Ivory. You're scraping for Peyton Hillis and guys like that, and you're plugging guys in and out. It's taken a lot of maneuvering. I've actually had more fun with fantasy this year than I have in 7 or 8 years probably.
Well, I'm glad that you can say that because Jared plays in two leagues with me. I suck the big A this year. And this is actually the first year that Jared's played with me. And, you know, here I'm bragging about, you know, got this radio show, know everything about fantasy football, got this stuff, got everything going on. And it didn't happen for me at all this year. And one of the leagues, we're in 16 teams deep. And if something goes wrong, there's nothing to go out there. And of course, those guys that have the players, are fortunate enough to have those players, aren't doing anything to trade them. Jason Hammer, what are your thoughts on fantasy football this week? And we're talking about football,
don't
fantasy girls.
Don't be afraid to roll the dice on a tight end. At this point, a good tight end can get you more points than your running back. Tight ends become a glamour position in the NFL. So if Jimmy Graham's not going to play this week, which it looks like he's going to sit out, you feel fine throwing him on the bench because you can pick up somebody like a Heath Miller that can get you 10. You can pick up somebody, you know, even like Brent Celek, who's been somewhat of a disappointment all year long with the way the Eagles throw the ball, the way that they get their offense rolling. I feel more comfortable with the tight end being able to bail me out than having to rely on some of these running backs.
Now, Jared, that's a very good point there, Jason. Jared, we don't think a lot about the tight ends as far as being big scorers for, but you know, you look that the tight end situation might be a good angle to look at when you're out there on the waiver wire, Jared.
Absolutely. If you look at the article that I had written earlier this week, I named it Jordan Reed.
Shameless plug.
Would say, yeah.
Shameless plug. Go ahead.
Hey, you know, you got to do what you can. But I wrote about a couple guys, and one of the guys on there was a tight end. You know, I'm the guy that had, you know, Jimmy Graham on bye last week and started Fouria from the Tigers and had a heart attack watching that game because he dropped passes all over the field after catching 3 touchdowns the week before. So definitely getting some play time, getting some attention. I mean, you look at what Jermichael Finley was doing last week and before he got hurt, you know, sad situation there. But tight end this is a passing league this year. Tight ends are the guys you got to look out for. The real crazy situation that I'm thinking about is the Eagles. You know, they just kind of throw it all over the field to everybody. I'm waiting on Zach Ertz to get involved a little bit more. It seems like every week he gets a little bit more involved. So maybe if he can find some rapport with Michael Vick, some big things for him.
Well, we're talking with Derek Schultz of Schultz, Query & Schultz, 1260 AM, Jason Hammer of Hammer & Nigel. Derek Calhoun works with me over at Gannett. And you can also find his article, Second Half Heroes, on our online on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com. Go on there and check that out, guys. Well, let's get into some stardom, some set-ems. Let's look at the quarterback situation. We'll start with you, Derek. When you're looking at starting quarterbacks this year, this week, who's a must-start, who would you set as far as quarterbacks go?
Well, the must-starts are really the easy ones. I would have said Cam Newton, but they've already played on Thursday night because they're playing a winless Buccaneers team, and I think we're underrating what a great season that he's having so far. I'm actually in a 12-team keeper league where somebody inexplicably drops Peyton Manning.
What?
So I finished second to last in my league last year and had the first pick on the snake draft and ended up taking Manning, and I've been reaping the benefits of that the entire way here. So there are certain guys, Aaron Rodgers, et cetera, that I don't even look at matchups that I consider are must-starts every single week. But there are a couple. The Giants with Eli Manning, I think at this point you need to start thinking about other options. At Philadelphia, it's a defense that doesn't give up, at least it didn't last week, to Tony Romo, a ton of points. They already beat the Giants in Jersey. He's a guy that I would probably stay away from. Plus, he's committing about almost 2 turnovers a game so far this season. So I think he's the guy that you want to sit.
Well, I was going to go to Jason Hammer, but we seem to have lost him. I'm not sure what happened there. Maybe he's in an actual rundown from the cops. With Jason Hammer, you never really know what happens, why we've lost him from the phone. No, I'm just kidding. So hopefully he'll get back with us here in a second. Jared, start him setting quarterbacks. What are your thoughts?
Oh, man. There's probably 10 guys or so that you got to start. You know, people have been hating on Tom Brady. I'm looking at a guy that has receivers that drop passes all over the field. You know, Tom Brady is still a good quarterback. They're saying, you know, there's a lot of rankings hate going on. That's the guy that still needs to be in your lineup. You're going to hate yourself if you sit him for somebody like Andy Dalton or Terrell Pryor, and then he drops six touchdowns to Gronkowski this week or something like that. That's just an offense that's been struggling because of their lack of consistency in the passing game. You look at who he throws to every week, and it's somebody different. So the same thing with the running game. You know, they're handing the ball to somebody different every game. So that's somebody you need to have in the lineup. You know, Terrell Pryor's back from bye. If you don't have one of the top guys, you know, make sure you get Michael Vick back in. He was lighting up the Giants before he got hurt last time they were playing. Those are guys you need to be looking out for. I mean, I would stay away from Carson Palmer, though. If you've got him, and you could maybe get a better option. You know, I might, there's a lot of better options out there. But, you know, there's guys that have I heard an interesting stat. I know I just spoke well of Tom Brady, but Alex Smith had the same fantasy stats this year as Tom Brady, pretty much. Alex Smith, quality play. If you've got somebody on bye that you need to go, I know he's getting a solid defense in Cleveland, but, you know, I've seen Cleveland give up a lot of points this year.
And we're talking fantasy football huddle. Derek Schultz of Query & Schultz, 1260 AM, and Jared Calhoun joining us. We have lost Jason Hammer. I'm not sure what happened there. My start and set of quarterbacks, guys, I kind of look at the matchups here. Again, kind of lopsided this week, but certainly I think the best game, I think, of the week, we're looking at the Lions and the Cowboys. So I would think in a situation like that, you have to start Matthew Stafford. I mean, he's been on fire. He's posted, over 1,000 yards, 10 total touchdowns, and so certainly why he's hot, play Matthew Stafford, RG3 at the Broncos. I think he's back, guys. I think over the last few weeks, only 4 quarterbacks have scored more fantasy points than RG3. Colin Kaepernick at Jacksonville in London there. Is that where they're playing at, really? Was that last week? Am I off?
No, I think there's a game overseas this week.
Wow.
I didn't. You would think I'd be on it, but I didn't know that. Michael Vick versus the Giants. Certainly, the Giants have just struggling all over the place. And guys, if a quarterback that you may think might be your sleeper quarterback of the week, I would go with Ben Roethlisberger. Guys, set Terrell Pryor. He is, in my opinion, just. And I know, Jared, I know you're a huge fan of Pryor, but when the matchup is not there, it's not there, and he's got a bad matchup against the Steelers. Set Russell Wilson, Alex Smith, and Geno Smith at the Bengals. All right, we're going to move on to the running back situation. And Derek put a very good point about it. It's been kind of a bipolar year, especially for running backs, but running backs is especially in a lot of leagues, is where you're going to get a lot of points. So start them, set them, running backs the best you can. Play with what you have. Derek, who do you start? Who do you set in the running back position this week?
Like I said, there are a lot of guys that I think you start every week. There's a small handful that you start every week. But if you're like me and you're a Forte owner and you're looking for other options, or let's say you lost Doug Martin, or, injuries have just ravaged the position – there are all kinds of fines on the waiver wire here. I don't know what the heck the Jets are going to do and who is going to get the lion's share of the carries, but last week, Chris Ivory turned into the workhorse back instead of Bilal Powell. So I would look at him maybe as an option. They're at Cincinnati, which is a tough defense, but, hey, if you're in a bind and you know a guy's going to get 25 carries, then chances are he's going to do something for you. Zach Stacy of the Rams I think is a decent option. They're at home against Seattle, and Seattle is a good run defense, but with their question marks at quarterback, you'd have to think that St. Louis is going to at least try to establish the run, because if it's Brady Quinn, if it's Kellen Clemens, whoever they're going to start at that spot, they're going to be in trouble there. So I actually think that there are some good finds. The Giants with Peyton Hillis didn't have a great game on Monday Night Football, but he did score a touchdown, and it looks like he's going to be their lead option here moving forward. If you're in a deeper league like you are, Tom, in a 16-team league, I think any of those guys are pretty good finds. But even in a 12-team league, I think you can get by on a short-term basis with any of those.
Absolutely, and it is rough to find some good running backs, and those are some very good choices. Jared, start him, set him running backs this week. And wait a minute, quickly before you start, Jared. I think we have got Hammer back. Hammer, were you running from the cops or what? What happened there, buddy?
No, I did that last week. Sorry, I had a dead phone, so I apologize. I am back in the mix.
Hey, all right, Hammer and Nigel from Hammer and Nigel Show. We appreciate you being back. Go ahead. We're talking to stardom set ems, and we're in running backs to bring you up to speed there, Jason. Jared, go ahead. I apologize. I did not mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yes, Tom, for your information, there is an overseas game in London this week, and there's a reason why you have not heard about it, because it is San Francisco versus Jacksonville. So that should be an absolute debacle, beat down type of situation. So that's why you haven't heard much about it. It's at Wembley Stadium. There you go.
Nobody's talking about it. That's why. Go ahead.
Yeah. We don't care. Just put it on
TV.
Don't
care about that
game. Show me when Trangor scores a touchdown. Holy cow. Start and sit of this week. You're pretty much rolling with your top guys, in my opinion, until you get down to maybe the level that we were just talking about with Zach Stacy. You know, that's a great point. I hadn't thought about the fact that, you know, I've been down on Zach Stacy this week. I think the Seahawks are just going to shut him down was my first inclination. But, you know, with the loss of Sam Bradford, you know, maybe they start to do some things to get him a little bit more motivated there in that game. Maybe Tavon Austin becomes a bigger part of that game than has been. Maybe he just runs those, reverses and little short screen passes from whoever decides to throw the ball over there. I don't even, who is going to start for the Rams? Does anybody know?
Brady Quinn. Are you talking about the running back?
No, for quarterback. So maybe
quarterback
Brady Quinn.
Is Brady Quinn.
Yeah, I remember in college he used to have a big arm, so maybe he's just bombed a couple out there. Who knows? Some other guys you got to have in the game. You know, you got to have your Jaren Sproles in. Deeper than that, you know, I don't think you're really rolling with some of these guys. Maybe Roy Helu, you're going to have Andre Ellington in the game. But when you get down to the, you know, the Mike Tolbert range, the Joyke Bell range, I think Joyke might be ready to go on Sunday. I think Reggie Bush might have a bit of an injury thing going on. to monitor that situation, but you're not putting Joseph Randle back out there this week. DeMarco Murray is coming back. You're going for the home run with your wide receivers. Like I mentioned in that article again, you're going with your Jordan Reed that you just picked up last week. You're going with the wide receivers, Terrence Williams, the Jarrett Boykin you just got, because you want that potential for 20 points, not, you know, I'm going to get six. That doesn't win you fantasy. It's the guys that go off that will really help you. So go with your top guys, but after that, you know, unless you're really stacked at running back, if you're maybe, say, you're dealing with, you know, a choice between LeSean McCoy, Eddie Lacy, and NoSean Moreno, and Le'Veon Bell, you know, that's a very good possibility that's your backfield. You know, that's a great problem to have. You're not going to lose in any of those situations.
Well, or if you're like me, the only running backs you have on your team or have the possibility of getting are third-string running backs. So handcuff to a handcuff is all I've got. Jason Hammer, start him, set him running backs this week.
You know what? I'm a big believer in you dance with who brought you. I don't believe in sitting somebody with matchups down. If you've got Marshawn Lynch, if you've got Reggie Bush, unless they're injured, play those people. I don't care if they're going against the 1985 Bears. As bad as this running back pool is in the NFL right now, take your shot with it. I would rather have a gimpy Reggie Bush going against the solid defense than taking my chance on a third-string running back out of Tampa, who might get a spot start. So dance with who brought you. I made that mistake earlier this year. I sat down Reggie Bush when he was questionable, and he had a 30-point game. So don't be afraid to have a little faith in your dudes.
Have a little faith in your dudes. I've lost faith in my dudes as well. But I will tell you guys, for my choices for running back situation, your guy, Jared, Ed Lacy, obviously at the Vikings, I think he's getting back in his groove. And as a rookie, he's scoring close to 30 combined fantasy points over the last two games. So you certainly want to look at also Moreno there against the Redskins. Certainly that's a great start. Frank Gore at Jacksonville, Doug at Jacksonville, at London, I guess. Steve Redley, that matchup against the Dolphins, he appears to be back in good graces of a lot of fantasy owners. So Steven Redley. Uh-huh. And I picked him up on our balance league. I think I picked him up anyway. So that shows you I don't know who I picked up or who I have it, but I know I put it in there for it, but I didn't check the waiver wire this morning to see if I actually got it. But Peyton Ellis at the Philadelphia Eagles, I think he's your sleeper guy to do. And it's certainly you want to set Zach Stacy, you want to set Chris Ivory, Ben Jarvis, Green Ellis, and Willis McGahee. I'm not a McGahee fan at all. A lot of people have swamped all over him, but I think that he is highly overrated. So we've got a wide receivers, Mr. Derek Schultz of a Schultz Aquarii show on 1260 AM here in Indianapolis. If anybody knows anything about wide receivers, it's Derek. Derek, what say you?
I'm actually – I haven't been scouring the waiver wire as much because I'm actually in a really good spot with my wide receivers. There's no player in fantasy that's more frustrating to own than Larry Fitzgerald because he always gets taken high, and then I think the quarterback he plays with has always been bad. Even Carson Palmer has been awful this year. But my three are DeSean Jackson, Vincent Jackson, and Larry Fitzgerald. So really, just about every single week I'm starting those guys. But there are – a couple that I think are actually that have been bad plays that are good plays today. If you have Hakeem Nicks, I know I said to sit Eli Manning, but I'm assuming that the Giants are going to be playing from behind in Philadelphia. I think Hakeem Nicks is actually a really good play this week to pick up some garbage yards late in the game. Also, if you look at those lopsided blowouts, a lot of times those receivers are good options. I think Jared mentioned Tavon Austin in St. Louis. St. Louis is going to be playing from behind. They're an 11-point dog. Anybody from Washington, Pierre Garçon, et cetera, from that team, I think they're going to be playing from behind. They're going to have to score a lot of points against Denver. So I think this is a really good week for a lot of those bad teams. Their number one or number two targets, I think, are all good plays.
Jared, as we move on to the wide receiver position, and you look at the wide receivers this week, a little bit better of a situation than your running backs as far as who to pick from. But when you look at wide receivers here in this week, who do you start and who do you set there, Derek? I mean, I'm sorry, Jared.
Yeah, you need to have Jared Boykin in your lineup.
Boykin.
The guy came in and put up 20 points, you know, like his second time on the field. You know, it's the situation that they've got going in Green Bay is very similar to what we had in Indianapolis, where, you know, Peyton Manning could make Blair, whatever his name, into, you know, a 20-point receiver, Austin Colley, who apparently can't get a job anymore, into a 15-points-a-game receiver. So, considering that these guys probably – that Boykin has more athletic ability than those guys, you know, this is somebody that you want to – you need to have your hands on. In our 16 team, you know, here comes the sob story. I lost Randall Cobb, and somebody beat me on the waiver wire to Jarrett Boykin. I was so mad at that because I already have had this injury-ravaged season, so I couldn't be higher on him. You know, back to the Tavon Austin, I'm not endorsing start him this week, but if he's under waiver wire, that's the guy you need to pick up because he had a 63-yard touchdown called back last week on a tripping penalty. So not everybody sees that, but they're getting him more involved. Yes, that was before Sam Bradford went out, but they're trying to throw him the ball, and he has that big playability. So you never know what's going to happen. Who knows who Brady Quinn's going to have, you know, the rapport with going forward. So, you know, I'm staying away from the New England guys besides Gronkowski. I'm not sure if Amendola is going to be good to go, so watch out for him. You know, he's always seems to have an injury. So look out for Tompkins as well. Maybe if you're in a really deep league, but I'd prefer, you know, running out Golden Tate this week or the Jets wide receivers. At least you know who might get some direct targets. So, trying to think. I mean, you're starting your number one guys every week. Where it gets into a little bit of question is when you start looking at, you know, maybe you've been kind of on the edge on Marques Colston, but Jimmy Graham does not play this week. Marques Colston, you know, elevates huge. You need to have him in your lineup. Same thing with Harry Douglas. Those are guys that you want to lean on.
Well, anyway, we're talking with Derek Schultz of Schultz Aquarium, 1260 AM. Jared Calhoun works with me over at Gannett. Also, Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. You can find them at hammerandnigel.com. They also have been hired by Obamacare to fix the website, too. And they're going to actually transform the Obamacare website to the Hammer and Nigel website. So, wow, what a project. Jason Hammer, what say you on the wide receiver, sir?
All righty, here's the deal. If you can make a trade right now for a Jacksonville receiver, now I know this sounds about as bad as Obamacare, go for it. Justin Blackman's a player. Now, I'm fully aware that their quarterbacks have been blind 13-year-old girls ever since the franchise got rid of Mark Brunell. I'm aware of that. But Justin Blackman will get you points. So if you can make a deal, because I'm pretty sure he's taken or scooped up off the waiver wire at this point, make a deal, pick up Justin Blackman. You will not regret it. Now, if you're looking for a Hail Mary, look no further than to Derek's Giants and maybe take a flyer on Reuben Randall if he's not scooped up already, depending on how deep your league is. But, again, don't be afraid to take a shot on a Jag. Don't expect touchdowns. But, again, they're going to be playing from behind. They're going to have to throw the ball eventually. And who better to catch the ball than Justin Blackman? So I'm going to leave you with that, gentlemen. I've got to take my kids to the pumpkin patch right here, and they're starting to get real rowdy and throw Hot Wheels at me. So I'm going to have to bounce out the door. But those are my parting words.
All right, buddy.
And a Jacksonville receiver. Boom.
There you go. Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. Real quickly, Jason, give us your shameless plugs.
Shameless plugs. You can find us online, hammerandnigel.com, Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/hammerandnigel. Twitter, we're at Hammer and Nigel. We do a live show every Thursday downtown at Coach's Tavern. You can also hear us from time to time on various radio stations throughout central Indiana, as recently as X103, and we've got a couple more coming up that we're going to announce soon.
Oh, great. We'll love to hear it. Jason Hammer, we appreciate you taking time to join us. Go have some fun with the pumpkins.
Always a pleasure, gentlemen.
All right. Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. Love having him on. Guys, we're about out of time here, so we want to make sure that Derek Schultz has an opportunity to do his shameless plugs. So, Derek of the Schultz Aquarius Show, 1260 AM, we appreciate you joining us today. Derek, it's your turn for shameless plugs.
Yeah, it's Twitter at Schultz1260. That's SCHULTZ1260. WNDE.com. You'll find the Query and Schultz blog page there. And also, I'm going to be doing something with basketball season starting where I'll be helping host a webisode at IndyStar.com for Pacers previews during the season, which I'm really excited about. And that starts on Tuesday. So keep your eye open for that.
Well, Derek, before we let you go, is there anything that we haven't touched on as far as the NFL goes or even the World Series, go Cardinals, that you want to talk about in this week's sports stories or anything that we haven't talked about that you want to throw out there?
There's one thing just, Tom, and I know that we've become pretty close through Facebook and everything else, and I like you and your show a great deal. But growing up in New England – I actually grew up in Connecticut, which was a bit of a dividing line for Yankees Sox, and I'm a big Yankees fan. But I know Sox fans, and because I've lived in Indy now for almost 10 years, I know a lot of Cardinals fans, and I couldn't pick two more insufferable fan bases to face off against each other in a World Series. So this is kind of a lose-lose situation for me, but I think it's going to be a great series. I think these teams are really evenly matched. And secretly, I'm pulling for St. Louis, but we'll see what happens. I think the winner of Game 3 today ends up winning the series.
There you go. You heard it first from Derek Schultz of Schultz and Query, and I am also a fan of your show as well, sir. So I look for the invite to your show at some point. So
sounds good, Tom. Have a great weekend.
You too, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. Derek Schultz of Schultz and Query on 1260 AM. Always enjoy having these guys on. Just known for years, have a lot of fun with these guys and the stories that could be told. Jared Calhoun, I'm going to give you a minute or so here to just give us a rant. Let us have it, sir.
Oh, man. So I'm not sure if you guys have been aware, Ronnie Hillman fumbled last night playing versus the Colts, and he has been deactivated for Sunday. So they promoted their practice squad guy, who they've been carrying all year, to be number three. Can't remember his name, but the important thing is playing behind a guy who's kind of revived his career, who used to be an injury problem, is your Monty Ball. So, I like to pride myself on picking guys up the week before they go off, so this is your time. Go grab Monte Ball, because if no Sean Moreno gets hurt, you've got yourself somebody who's going to win you your fantasy league the rest of the way. So Ronnie's in the doghouse. Monte's, number two now. That's your guy to look out for. So, I saw that little bit, thought that might help some people. Go get those guys early. Check my blog out. If you did not pick those guys up, if you're not starting those guys, go get them. Go get your replacement. It's a new season. You have, six or eight more weeks to win it, so you might be out of it now, but more injuries could happen that could elevate you in with good managing. So there you go. Go Colts. I know we're on bye. We're going to miss you, Reggie, but let's chuck the ball to Darius Hayward Bay and to our man, T.Y. Hilton, and let's play some football.
Absolutely. Jared Calhoun, you can find his work on our website, www.thebalanceonline.com. Excellent our article this week, Second Half Heroes. Jared, you have yourself a good weekend. We'll talk to you next week, sir.
Thank you, Tom.
All righty. Jared Calhoun, Fantasy Football Huddle. We missed Todd the teacher today. He had said that he was going to be able to call, but I guess he wasn't able to do that, so we missed him. Hey, I appreciate my minions sticking around with me every single week, and we have so much fun with this show. I want to thank Kevin Lee of NBC Sports for joining us today. It was an excellent interview. Kent Sterling, 1070 The Fan, kentsterling.com, and Breakfast with Kent. Also, Derek Schultz of Schultz and Query, 1260 AM. Jason Hammer of the Hammer and Nigel Show. And, of course, Jared Calhoun. Guys, it's been great. And I do want to say this. We are here in Indianapolis. We're big Colts fans here. We're going to miss Reggie Wayne. You get better. We really are going to rally behind you. And if you guys could get on Facebook or Twitter, hashtag Reggie Strong throughout the rest of the year, and we can do that, and hopefully next year we'll have Reggie Wayne back bigger and better. Well, guys, I want to also thank all of our affiliate stations, and especially Indiana Talks. You can hear our encore show this afternoon from 3 to 5 on Indiana Talks. Just go to www.indianatalks. If Indiana's talking, they are talking on Indiana Talks. Well, my name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Remember, don't drink and drive. Happy Halloween.
My monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the car's release to the master bedroom where the vampires feast, the ghouls all came from their humble to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.